Welcome to the Zenith Bank PLC H1 2018 Investor and Analyst Conference Call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, so there's no need to mute your own individual lines, and afterwards there'll be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, the call is being recorded. I'll now hand the floor to our host, Mr. Peter Amabo, MD. Please begin.
Good afternoon, welcome to Zenith Bank's half year 2018 presentation of our financial statements. With me on this call this afternoon, I have members of our executive committee. I have our Deputy Managing Director, Ebenezer Onyango. I have Dennis Olise, Executive Director. I have Dr. Tope Fashionrotin, Executive Director. I have Mike Anyima, our Group Treasurer. I have Joshua, our Acting Head of Risk Management. Of course, I have Muktar Adam, our Chief Financial Officer. The presentation is already posted on our website, but I'll just give a brief overview. I'll start with the macroeconomic environment. GDP had been positive, witnessed a growth of 1.95% year-on-year for Q1 2018. Inflation moderated to 11.23% in June 2018. Oil prices have been on the upward rise at an average of $70 per barrel. Foreign reserve at an average of $47 billion per barrel. It's also important to note that interest rates dropped sharply from the beginning of the year up to date. Treasury rates dropped from an average of about 20% as at December 2017 to an average of 12% as we speak. It's also important to note that there's a gradual convergence of exchange rates in the RMB window and the wholesale market. As at today, the wholesale rate is approximately 351 thereabout, while the RMB is 360. We are very sure that in no distant time, we should have a convergence of those two rates. We'll have to now contend with the retail CBN rates and any other single rate, which is the RMB. Coming to Zenith and our performance, I'm happy to announce that we closed the half year with a profit before tax of 107.4 billion. I would say this is quite a good result based on what we projected and in spite of all the challenges we have in the system. If you look at our balance sheet, you will note that our balance sheet dropped marginally. It's actually deliberate because we've adopted a smarter way of managing our balance sheet. Our focus is on efficiency and not just size. That's why you'll find out that liquidity management is now at the core of our strategy going forward. We'll continue to look at ways of improving our performance, increasing our deposit base, essentially from the retail side. Emphasis is on demand deposits and also low-cost fixed deposits. Barring any unforeseen circumstance, we believe that the second half of the year should witness a slightly higher growth than what we had in the first half of the year. I want to stop at this junction to allow our Chief Financial Officer, Mukhtar, to take us through the numbers, and thereafter we'll have sufficient time for questions and answers. Thank you very much, and Mukhtar, over to you, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Mukhtar Adam. I'm the CFO. I'm not going to go through the slides. I'm just going to look at the key points that drove the performance during the half year. Our PBT was 107.4 billion, an increase of 16% from the 92.2 billion reported in June 2017. This was driven largely by our efficient treasury and liquidity management in the midst of low-yielding environment, as you can see that our deposits dropped. We reported an ROE of 21%, which was flat when compared to June 2017, with an ROA decline of 3% from 3.1%. This was largely due to dividends that was higher in last year that affected the effective tax rate for half year 2018. You would also notice that our gross revenue declined as a result of decline in our interest income and trading gains. Within the half year 2018, yield on treasury bills dropped by about 800 basis points, and this accounted for the drop in our interest income. As a bank, we responded to the decline in the top line by shifting our focus from fixed deposits to less expensive savings deposits. This resulted in a 39% reduction in our interest expense from 123 billion in 2017 to 74.7 billion in 2018, pushing cost of funds down to 3.4% from 6.4%. It also pushed our NIMs up to 10.1% from 8.6%. Impairment charge also reduced during the period by 77 billion. That is from 4.42 billion to 9.7 billion. I take it again. During the half year, June 2018, our impairment charge reduced from 42 billion to 9.7 billion. Due to enhanced asset quality. This drove our cost of risk down to 0.9% from 3.6%. On operating expense, we recorded a 6% increase in operating expense on account of additional AMCON charge due to the change in the basis of computation of AMCON levy to include off-balance sheet assets. This resulted in about 7 billion increase in AMCON charge, which is effectively the increase in our OPEX between June 2017 and June 2018. Despite the AMCON effect, we maintained a declining trend of our cost-to-income ratio, which at June 2018 was 54.9% when compared to 56.7% in prior period. It is important to mention that the total AMCON levy for the 2018 financial year has been absorbed in H1. Hence, no more AMCON charge will be taken in H2. Fees and commission income increased during the period, with the major increase coming from our fees on electronic products, which is in line with the overall growth in our retail business. So from the performance point of view, what has clearly happened in this reporting period is that we had a 15% decline in our top line, but we matched it effectively by a 47% reduction in cost of funds, 75% reduction in cost of risk, and 3% reduction in cost to income ratio to give us a 16% growth in PBT. Diversification of our revenue base is also helping the bottom line, and we expect that to continue to the end of the year. On the balance sheet, you can see that our deposits declined by 8% as a result of our deliberate strategy to change the deposit mix in order to reduce our cost of funds, which was achieved successively. Fixed deposits reduced while savings accounts increased, reflecting Zenith increasing its market share on the retail business. We will continue to grow our deposits along this line, and we plan to close the financial year end with a 5% deposit growth when compared to FYE17. Our loan book shrinked due to early repayments during the period. However, we are exploring new opportunities to grow the loan book. For the remaining part of the year, we expect to grow the loan book by 25% from FYE 2017 levels. On the quality of our assets, you can see that our NPL ratio was 4.9% when compared to 4.7% that we reported in the end of 2017. But you also note that the absolute NPL did not increase, as the absolute was just 4 billion higher than 2017 levels. The increase in the ratio was largely due to the reduction in the loan book, not necessarily due to significant deterioration in the asset quality. So from the balance sheet perspective, you can see that we are clearly repositioning our balance sheet for greater efficiency without losing market share. There are other important issues that we need to mention here. For our NIMS, net interest margin, in Q1 report, interest income earned from treasury bills that was held as a result of our swap transactions were reported as interest and similar income. That affected the NIMS computation. However, in H1 2018 report, those incomes have been reported as part of trading income, which is consistent with the reporting we have adopted in prior periods. That needs to be mentioned. Then our adjusted NIMs that we have reported of 10.1% reflects the NIMs computation that has included the interest income from swap treasury bills into the interest income for the purpose of NIMS computation. That is what we have referred to as adjusted NIMS. And we have done that consistently when compared to prior period. Then IFRS 9 effect on our capital. For IFRS 9, we had an adjustment of 108 billion against our retained earnings. This resulted in reduction in the shareholders' fund by 12%. It also helped to increase our coverage ratio to 229%. Due to this adjustment, the capital adequacy ratio of the group reduced slightly. We closed with capital adequacy ratio of 21%, which is a very comfortable position. So that is the performance so far and some other things that we need to mention so far as the numbers are concerned. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mukhtar, for that presentation. I think we'll just go straight to Q&A.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now to enter the queue. Once your name is announced, you can ask your question. If you find it's answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel. So once again, that's 01 to ask a question or 02 if you need to cancel. Our first question comes from the line of Clemens Adouye of RMB Capital Management. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Okay. Good afternoon. Yeah, my first question is on your interest income line. For Q2, I noticed the marked decline of 40%. And on the call, you were explaining about reclassifying some of the interest income to trading income. Was this the major reason for the marked decline that we witnessed in Q2? And if not, is it just solely as a result of the low yield environment? And what are you doing currently to ensure you plug this revenue gap going into Q3 and Q4? My second question is on IFRS 9. Earlier in January, you had booked 138 billion. But as at H1, I noticed that you revised it downwards by 30 billion. I just want you to explain why the disparity. Then my third question is on your trading income. The bit of volatility in that line, what do you expect for Q3, Q4? Do you expect performance for Q3, Q4 to be stronger than what we had in the first H1 18? Then my fourth question will be on your gross loans. I heard you mention 25% growth for FY17. I want to confirm, is it 25% or you mean 2.5%? Because as at H1, you're already down by 10.7%. I just want to clarify your expectation for your loan growth in for full year 2018. Then lastly, my question will be on your NPLs. Can I get a sense of the portion of your NPLs that are in foreign currency, and also a breakdown of your oil and gas NPLs into upstream, downstream, and services? Yeah, that will be all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mukhtar will take the questions on interest income, IFRS, gross loans, and NPLs. Then Mike will take the question on the trading line. Mukhtar, over to you.
Okay. On the reclassification issue, the reduction in our interest income is not largely due to the reclassification, but it's due to the low-yielding environment, which we have mentioned earlier. And then you can also see that our loan book actually dropped. So that accounted for the reduction in our interest income for the period. Then on IFRS 9, yes, we did have $130 billion as adjustment to retain earnings for our Q1 result. That was the initial estimate at the time that we were running the IFRS numbers. So after that, we have continued to simulate. You know, IFRS 9 relies heavily on forward-looking data that requires a lot of simulation. So we had continued to simulate, and we have worked with our auditors through the simulation to arrive at what is a very good position for the retained earnings adjustment. So that's what happens there. On the loan growth, we're talking about 2.5%, not 25%. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, for trading, with the normalization of the market, the excessive arbitrage opportunities that were there are diminishing. So we are reverting to normal levels. So what you are seeing is a normalized level of trading income. And so currently we are on 36.8 billion for the first half of the year. And we think this trend will continue for the remaining part of the year. So we shouldn't expect any unusual profits from trading.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take the next question.
My question on NPL. Question on NPL and the oil and gas breakdown.
Okay, the oil and gas breakdown, if you look at our classification, by what page do you have that on the presentation? We've always separated the upstream from the downstream. So
yeah.
you they are never grouped together. They are actually separate there.
For NPLs? No, I don't think so.
For long-term classification. What do you have for the NPL there?
No, it's not separated.
Yes.
It's together. On page 25.
On page 25.
Yes, for the NPLs, the is together. You're right. But you can see most of it is oil and gas. And oil and gas accounts for most of the...
No, he's talking about between the upstream and the
downstream.
I think that they are predominant. We don't. We have more of the upstream actually.
Right.
But we can give you the exact breakdown at some point. Yes. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Bermia Shirley of FBN Quest. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Bermia Shirley from FBN Quest. First question, I just wanted to clarify, beyond the early repayment on the loan book, could you just confirm whether there were any write-downs, especially on manufacturing and transport? Because the movement in your loan book and the NPLs, I just wanted to confirm that there were no write-downs, especially in those two sectors. Then what is driving the growth in communications and general commerce in terms of the loan book? Would you have preferred to have seen growth in manufacturing and transport as opposed to general commerce, for example? Given higher risk, I would have assumed in general commerce. Then if you could just talk around the movement in your NPLs from December to March to June, because it went down, then it went up quite a bit. If you look from December to June, it doesn't look like much happened. If the decline in Q1 was down to maybe accounting or write-down, the lift from March to June is a bit worrisome. So if you can just give some commentary on that. And then linked to that, I can see that the coverage ratio is a real boost, right, going forward as per your guidance. But you're slashing that cost of risk guidance from over 3% to 1%. What's giving you the confidence to slash it this much? I'm asking specifically because your Q2 results were really boosted, or the provisions line was a lifesaver. So if you can please comment on what's giving you the confidence as you're guiding forward. And finally, whilst we understand the way you may be led to guide on the tax rate vis-a-vis dividends and taxable income, can you just spend a little bit more time explaining the distribution of the tax charge between H1 and H2? Because the Q2 charge was a real surprise, a negative surprise. So if you can just help us on that. Thanks.
Mukta, please go ahead.
Okay. Let me start from the last question. That's on the tax charge between Q1 and Q2. For us, our tax is largely based on dividend tax because our dividend payout is higher than our taxable income. And you are not able to book those tax expense in the previous financial year. So you have to book it in the subsequent financial period. That can also be booked after you have had AGM and the dividend has been approved. That happened in April. So before that April, you could not have booked the excess dividend tax. And once you book it, you have to take it immediately. you don't have opportunity to spread it. So that explains the significant increase in the tax charge that you see for Q2. And then the movement in our NPL between December, March, and June, you know that NPL depends on the specific obligors. Between December 2017 and June 2018, we have had a movement between the oil and gas and transport. The transport sector NPL has reduced, and the oil and gas NPL has increased. Then between December to March, there was also movement between industry, and some of them went down. But of course, between the March to June, 3 months is a lot of time in managing loans. So some other things that moved down have moved again. That's why you are seeing. But if you look at it from consistently, you can see that we are not too far from where we started from December 2017. And that's for the NPL. In terms of, you asked about write down or write off. For the period January to June, we have had some loan write off, but the amount is not significant to explain the drop in our loan book. The write-off was around 13 billion, which is not significant. So the main cause for the drop in the loan book is pay down, as we have mentioned earlier.
Cost of risk?
Yeah, cost of risk. Of course, we're doing IFRS 9, and it requires forward-looking data. You would know that last year, 2017, we took huge impairment on specific names. That increased our impairment charge significantly. In the full year 2017, our impairment charge also increased significantly. So that was a period for us last year to take as much impairment charge as possible. Okay. So going forward, we will not expect to have higher impairment charges, because we've actually taken the hit as much as possible in 2017. So we expect it to remain around this level and not go beyond this level. We don't expect it to deteriorate.
Thank you very much, Musa. Just to address your question on the growth in general commerce and the communication, you ask whether wouldn't you have been happier to see the growth in manufacturing. We already have a limit for all the different sectors, and I can assure you that we've not, we are still very comfortable with where we are. The important thing in lending is not necessarily whether it is manufacturing, then it makes it less risky. Not necessarily. There are so many things that come into question if you are going to rate a credit. So it is the obligor, really, is as important as the sector that we are actually lending to. And the growth you are talking of, they are not really very material. You can see that they range between 1 and 1.8%. So you wanted to make a comment?
Yes, yeah, so I just wanted to quickly follow up on the cost of risk guidance comment. I understand the year-on-year comparison, where you were before and what may have changed, IFRS 9, blah, blah, blah. But the what I'm really talking about is the guidance you'd given before was over 3%, and that guidance was given this year post some computation and simulation on IFRS 9. So are you saying that you're just a lot more comfortable, whereas in, well, maybe 3-4 months ago, you were just being super conservative?
Okay. I will not say super conservative, but we have always said, for us as a bank, we are very prudent. Whenever we see a possible deterioration in our loan book, we don't wait till it happens. We take a forward step. And I referred you to June 2017, where we took heavy impairment charge on certain specific names that was showing sign of deterioration at the time that we could have waited to the end of the year or this year. So that is the way we approach our credit risk. As soon as we see a sign of deterioration, we take the impairment and continue from there. So we are very prudent in our impairment charge. That is what has happened in 2019. In 2017. Now in 2018, we don't have any such situation like that at hand. So, but if any of them comes, we are going to take a prudent impairment charge as soon as we see those signs. We are not going to wait. The guidance given was based on IFRS 9. So we are going to monitor the guidance again and see our loan books. If we need to revise the guidance, we will. But for now, that is the guidance. We don't expect the cost of risk to increase significantly.
Okay. Just to add, the current guidance you are seeing is based on IFRS 9. The one we gave for full year 2017 was before IFRS 9 provision, and that's why it was that high. Now, with the provision taken, it has dropped in terms of guidance. That's why it is this low, just to add.
Okay, thank you very much for the clarification. Let's take the next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Craig Befferell of AVO Capital Markets. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Just some questions around where you see growth coming from in H2. Mr. Mangmo mentioned that you believe H2 will be better than H1. I mean, if we just look at outside of the various cost control measures that you've implemented, so obviously you've placed heavy emphasis on reducing cost of funds, operating expenditure, growth has been contained, largely driven by AMCON charge, and then you've obviously seen a normalization in cost of risk. So in this low-yield environment, and perhaps it might feed into your loan growth guidance, which is pretty ambitious of about 15% for the remaining 6 months of the year, where exactly do you see the catalyst for earnings growth to come from? And if you could just talk to the kind of sectors that you believe you can obviously lend to, and does that specifically feed into your loan-to-funding guidance of 65%, which is quite a lot higher than it is at H1? And then if I could just ask on the account maintenance fees. So half year on the previous half year and the comparative period, it looks in order. But H2 last year was quite a phenomenal period for the current account maintenance fee. So there's a large base for the full year. Is the H2 performance repeatable, or do you think that this is a more normalized level from the account maintenance fee? And then just if one last question on IFRS 9, the change from the 138 revised down to 108 billion of retained earnings. Were the auditors involved just as much in the initial adjustment as they were in these audited numbers? And perhaps, you know, the forward-looking environment is changed sufficiently just to obviously justify that change. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll just take the first part of the question. Where do we see growth coming from? Well, you can see that the environment is still very much a challenge. That is not in doubt. And H1, for H2, you recollect, which you already mentioned, that AMCON charge, we paid 28 billion in the first half. For second half, that in a way is almost tantamount to savings, because there's no AMCON charge that will come up in H2. But from a real business perspective, you'll see that our retail is on the upward trend, that segment of our business. And we are very bullish and aggressive about it. We expect that as we move on month, we are recording very good progress, and we see that as a major growth area. And when I talk about it, I'm looking at across all the channels, whether in terms of deposits or in terms of the fees from the electronic channels that we have. Also, from the manufacturing sector, we still see some opportunities there with the introduction of the differentiated CRR, which Central Bank is promoting, whereby people can actually borrow money at 9%, We believe that that will be an incentive for a lot of the manufacturers to come up with the expanded lines and also new lines and products. The engagement has started. They are very enthusiastic, and we believe that that is also a growth area. I don't think that it's going to be a case of taking a bigger risk, no. All the transactions we are going to do on this differentiated CRR will still fall within our risk acceptance criteria, and we are still going to be dealing with the same profile of customers. So we expect that we should see growth in this specific area. Also, we have opportunities to also grow on the corporate side. GDP is actually, the growth is slightly muted, but we expect that even if we record another 0.5 to close the year, let's say at 2%, that itself should actually help. We expect that there will be much more activity in the economy from the maybe public sector driven in the next 5 months. And that also has a way of boosting economic activities. So if you look at all these factors, we are quite positive that H2 will be slightly better than H1. Thank you very much. Mukhtar, you can take the other part of the question.
Okay, on the account maintenance, you could see that we mentioned earlier our deposits actually dropped. And account maintenance is a function of volume of transactions. That's one. You would also see that our fees on electronic products increased. Okay? So you are seeing transactions being done through different electronic platforms that is giving us fees. So we are compensating for the drop in account maintenance. However, in the second half of the year, we expect to see much more increase in the volume of transactions within our bank. And then we would expect the account maintenance fee to be higher than what it is in half year. We also expect the fees on electronic products to continue increasing. Okay? So then on IFRS 9, the initial assessment for Q1 was our internal assessment because we don't do audits for Q1. Okay? That assessment was higher, which is a reflection of our conservativeness when it comes to risk management and in taking provision or impairment. However, the one for half year was reviewed by auditors and, of course, also reviewed by the central bank, and then before we finalize.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will take your next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Aronik Gardiu of EFG Hermes. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for the presentation and taking my question. My first question is on Etisalat Nigeria. I think based on the discussions we were having at the full year results, you mentioned that Etisalat has been classified as an NPL. However, when I look at your NPL classification as of the first half, NPLs from the communication sector is only around 2%. So that doesn't seem to be the case. So is it a case that you've written off the Etisalat loan, or this is a loan that you haven't classified as an NPL but still provided for? My second question is to do with your NPL cover. I guess you've done a lot of explaining about IFRS 9 provisioning. But my question was, why do you need such a high NPL cover? Your NPL cover is now close to 200%. From what I believe, your specific NPL cover, your stage 3 NPL cover, is upwards of 100%. Why would you require such a high NPL cover, especially given the improving macro environment? And then my third question is on Ghana. Can you just update us on what the capitalization level for Ghana is and how you will meet the new capitalization requirements from the Bank of Ghana? And finally, on macro, if I could just pick your brains on why there's been such a weak correlation between the high oil prices and the macro in Nigeria. I mean, compared to historical levels, you know, we're seeing much weaker growth despite the substantial improvement in oil prices. And I'd like to get your thoughts on why that might be. Thank you.
On the pollution.
Okay. On the NPL, IFRS 9 NPL, the provision you are seeing is based on the rules or the principles as laid down by IFRS 9. And so we don't have much room to maneuver. We have to keep to the rules and the principles in IFRS 9. And then also, so that it is going to give us a high NPL, a high NPL cover. But you see, if you look at it, you are trying to apply the IFRS 9 retrospectively. That's why the standard is allowing you to take the charge from retained earnings. So you're saying that if you have to apply that standard backward, how will it impact you? It will definitely have a bigger impact. That is why you're seeing that huge amount. So it's not a decision that the bank has to make. It's based on the standard. So our NPL cover, that is what it is. You also note that prior to now, we were having credit risk reserve as guided by the central bank because our IFRS impairment was higher than the CBN impairment. So we're having credit risk reserve. But now, because it is high, we don't have that credit risk reserve again. So previously, if you add the credit risk reserve and the impairment on the balance sheet, we're still reporting loan loss cover of above 100%. So it's still not too much out of range in our view. Then capitalization for Ghana. Zenith Ghana was among the first banks to fully comply with the capitalization requirement. That is done. We don't have any issue with that capitalization requirement. Then
macro. I think the other
macro.
EMTS. Then you asked whether EMTS was classified or not. EMTS is not part of our NPL, but we have taken provision that is commensurate with the risk and the status of the EMTS loan. We did that from last year, June 2017.
On the macro, you were asking why we don't have a positive correlation between oil price growth and the economy. You remember that we are coming from a very deep recession. I mean, something has not happened to us since 1985 or thereabouts. And so we are in a recovery mode. We are coming out of it, and it's a gradual process. We're currently going at 1.9%. IMF project 2.3% for full year 2018. We guess 2019 will be better. So as oil price continue to stay where it is, production level holds, economic growth will continue to improve.
Okay. Thank you very much. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Tony Alametu of Exotics. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, and thanks for the presentation today. I have a few mostly follow-up questions. The first is, could you please tell us what exchange rate was used to compute the balance sheet as of the end of June? Second question is about the Q-on-Q changes in gross loans. It looks like there was an increase in agriculture loans and also loans to the government. I just wanted to confirm if that's correct and if you are comfortable with your exposure to the government going into the elections. Third question relates to Nine Mobile. I understand it's not classified, but could you maybe tell us what the coverage ratio is for that loan at the moment? Next question relates to NPLs and restructured loans. There was a lot of movement in restructured loans, as in it looks like restructured loans in oil and gas fell in the first half, but then NPLs and oil and gas increased. I just wanted to know whether that NPL increase was restructured loans flowing into NPLs or whether those NPLs are new, and if those NPLs are in any way related to Eren Energy. And finally, you have a bond that's due next year, the 500 million bond. I was wondering if you could comment on whether you intend to replace that or just pay it down, or whether you have other plans regarding issuance. The reason I ask is, looking at your disclosures, it looks like the US dollar balances, US dollar cash balances on your balance sheet decreased in the first half. So I just was wondering, maybe you could comment on FX liquidity in general. That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. On the exchange rate that we used, we used NYFEX as of June, which was around 331. So that is the exchange rate that we used. Then on EMTS, you wanted to know the coverage. We have taken impairment charge on EMTS up to 50%. Okay? So that is the coverage on EMTS. NPL on restructured loans. We have some NPLs coming in from oil and gas, okay, and not necessarily restructured, but there are new NPLs that are coming in that we have to take them in as NPLs.
And the reason why the NPL, the restructured loan of oil and gas went down is because power came up.
Okay.
That absolute didn't change, but because power increased, the percentage dropped.
Okay.
Okay. I think that covers it. The euro bond. Okay, euro bond that will be paid off when it matures.
And
yeah. So you wanted to know where the source will come from. We have assets that will be maturing about that time, and we intend to use those assets to pay down the euro bond. And so our cash balances today is not what you're going to use to pay down the euro bond, so that you'll be comfortable. We are not reissuing, we are paying down.
Okay. So if I may just go back to the question on Q-on-Q loan changes, gross loan changes, especially your exposure to agriculture and the government and how comfortable you are with increasing lending to the government going into the elections, please.
Okay. I think whether election or not, it's not really an issue as far as we are concerned. We've had elections in this country from 1999. We've had almost about 4 or 5 changes in government. So that in itself is not a concern to us. But in terms of lending, we've adopted the same approach of being very conservative. If you check the NPLs by sector, public sector is almost nothing there. But I can tell you that some of the facilities you have there, they are even cash collateralized credits, really. So there's really nothing to worry about in terms of the marginal increase of loans to the public sector. Thank you very much.
I think one other thing to add there is if you look at the loan position for 2017, you realize that manufacturing had a proportion of about 12.7%, where between year-end 2017 and now, we've had some pay down in manufacturing. So that drop in the proportion of manufacturing now made it look like other sectors that didn't experience a drop came up a little bit higher. That is also another reason why you see government and agri going up slightly.
Okay, thank you. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Aluya Oyeneke of ARM Investment Managers. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I'm Emmanuel Adeleke from ARM Securities. My first question is, I want to know what is Zenith Bank's derivative position? And then the second one is, what is the longest maturity on your derivative positions? And also, I observe that there's been an increase in the composition of NPLs to the oil and gas sector. So it has increased from about 37% to about 45%. So please, what is driving that growth today? Thanks.
Yeah, for our derivative exposure, our absolute nominal value of derivatives is about $4 billion. Absolute
okay.
nominal value is about $4 billion.
Okay.
And most of them are closed. Most of them are closed because most of them are swaps and back-to-back transactions. So they are not open per se. I think you asked about growth. Well,
yeah.
we don't expect it to grow dramatically. We maintain an exposure of about $1.5 billion on the four swap side, and I think that will remain into next year.
I think you can check page 19 for the details. You have the
okay.
foreign currency breakdown there. The derivative assets are there.
Okay. And on the NPL in the oil and gas sector, the group, we'd mentioned that it's a specific name. It's not a general, or we don't have so many customers that have come in into the NPL. It's a specific name that required to be classified that was done.
Okay.
Then if you also look at it, total loan book came down when compared year on year. So that also explains why you see that in 2018 now, the NPL will appear to have increased. But if you look at absolute amount, year on year, you see a drop between current year figure and 2017 figures.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take the next question.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Caitlin Byrne of Prudential. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for the call. If you could just expand more on that electronic service fee, the increase, so it looks like the increase in volumes is the same, but the increase in value is significantly different. I mean, is this a once-off impact? I mean, what sort of growth rate can we expect in this area going forward? Have you increased the charge, or is it merely the size of each of those transactions? The next question is on whether you're able to disclose the net effect of the swaps you were doing in the prior year, so taking into account the cost of funding for those swaps as well. And then if you can just talk to the geographies, the profits which you disclosed, it looks like Europe significantly improved. Was that just an impairment issue in Europe, which is no longer in the profits for this year? Thanks.
Okay, so I'll take the swap. Most of the swap we have in the book is FX swap. So what I do is typically I sell spots and I buy forward in the future. We've been doing this for a while. We maintain the same level of position in that, about $1.5 billion. And I don't think it will change going into next year. From what we see, we'll probably maintain that going into next year. However, if the interest rate in the two markets, the dollar market and the naira market, move quite dramatically, that might affect our eventual position.
Then on the electronic services, what you see there is we are extending our footprint extensively in the market. And within the various segments, apart from introducing new products, to capture a reasonable share of the market. We're also cross-selling as new products emerge. So that is also giving rise to increase in terms of the value and the volume. We will expect that this will continue to go up because we are steadily making the right investment in IT infrastructure to drive this, revamping our processes, our procedures, such that the business will just be self-evolving. And we're also quite strong in terms of new product development. So they will continue to do that. And these are targeted at specific segments.
Okay, thank you.
We're taking the euro, the contribution report by geography. Yes, Europe did improve. That is our operation in Zenith, UK. You asked whether it's because of impairment issue. Partly due to, yes, impairment and operational efficiency. That cut across the members in the group. We improved in impairment, charge, and also operational efficiency. Yeah, that's the answer.
Okay, thank you very much. Next question, please.
Thank you. The next question comes from Muyiwa Oni of SBG Securities. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions and follow-up questions. I think the first is on the e-banking volume and income growth. What I wanted to understand was your customer penetration in that e-banking space. So in terms of percentages, what number will you place to penetration on the retail space and on the corporate space? I think that would help to understand scope for growth for income in that on that line. And then secondly, Mr. Amambo referenced the new liquidity management strategy. I also wanted him to elaborate on that a bit more. And thirdly, on the differentiated CRR, could you share the potential volume that we could see on loans? And I think that number could come from what you will expect from some form of release from Central Bank on the CRR. And then lastly, just wanted you to share your thoughts on, I think it was a point the Central Bank governor made at the last MPC meeting on CPs, longer-term CPs, driving credit penetration to the real sector. I wanted to get what your view was on that and how that could drive credit growth for the sector. Thank you.
I think for the question on the electronic banking, talking about the volume, number, if you go to page 31, you will actually see the relativity across the very popular product that we offer. You'll be able to compare the type of growth we witnessed this first half and the comparative figure we have in prior period. So if you look at that, I can assure you that going forward, that type of increase will not be significantly different. There's still a lot of scope for improvement in that particular area. And it's not really dependent on probably trying to compare between corporate and retail. But I can assure you that the retail market is still thriving and will take advantage of every opportunity in that particular space. When I talked about the efficient liquidity management strategy, it's all about balance sheet management. It's not the volume of deposits that you have that matters. The important thing is, how are you able to utilize this deposit? And the key is also to ensure that you are able to generate low-cost liquidity as it is. And that's what we are focused on as against the volume itself. It's more about, for every deposit we have, for every liquidity we have in our system, we should be able to optimally utilize it such that the yield will ultimately be positive. On the differentiated dynamic CRR, I can't actually place a figure on it as it is to say, look, this is X that will do or Y that will do. Remember that it's one thing for the bank to present and Central Bank will take the ultimate decision. But for now, suffice to say that it's been quite positive in terms of the response of our customers in the manufacturing and agric sectors, those who are in the productive sectors of the economy. They are quite enthusiastic and they will want to take advantage of this. So I'll probably say we'll wait and see how things unfold. Then your last question on the one of the MPC resolutions on the longer term CP. Well, I think Central Bank would be in a better position for now to address that. So let's just adopt a wait and see approach when we get details of how this will be actualized. Thank you very much. Next question, please.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Aliyeza Jomadugu from Lead Pension. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you for the call. I just want to get an idea of how you guys see the interest rate environment evolving over the next year beyond the H2, and how you see that will impact NIMs next year. We saw this year you guys have your net interest income has been able to sustain growth despite reductions in your, as well, this is a common question, as well as despite reductions in your loan book and deposits. I see you maintain your deposit growth of 5%. I want to know whether you still expect that to maintain that projection for the second half of the year, and what you think would, why you maintained it. And also I want to see there was a reduction in term in your DOM deposit within Q1 and H2 of over 100 billion, and I'd like to see if there's any reason for that. Thank you.
Okay, well, I didn't get all your questions very well, but at least I know you talked about what do we think of the interest rate environment in the second half of the year. But yeah. I would actually say if you
beyond,
look at the...
Beyond the second...
Yeah. Okay, that's good. But I think, you know, it's always good to... Let's take it one step at a time. Let's start with the H2. And I'll say that if you read the MPC report, it captures both sides, everything in terms of H2. And they were very unanimous in terms of what the interest rate environment will be. And if you look at the decision, yes, they kept all the rates static, but the report also acknowledged the fact that there's a lot of pressure to actually increase interest rates. Even the two dissenting members in that particular report, the minority reports, they were very clear. They said, look, they should move up the rate. Those in majority even acknowledged the fact that there's a lot of pressure, and that's why they try to use other means to actually arrive at an equilibrium position. Of course, the dynamic CRR is one of them, you know, so that they don't actually offset the position that we have currently now. I would like to say there is some pressure there. I don't see interest rates going down below where we are currently because of the current state of the market. So at best, maybe we'll stay exactly where we are for the next half of the year.
Okay. Sorry, so just a follow-up. So I was asking about your deposit growth guidance. You maintain a 5% despite a reduction of what the from half to half year.
Yes.
And see why you guys decided to maintain it. And also there was a over 100 billion reduction in your domestic deposits. I don't know if there's any particular reason for that.
Well, I think the DOM account dropped quite all right. But in terms of overall deposit growth projection, we expect that we should be able to grow our deposits from where we are. We allowed quite a lot of funds to leave because of pricing, basically. Not because we couldn't have grown our deposits much, much higher than where we are. But it has to do with part of our strategy to say, look, we want low-cost deposits. And even within that constraint, we expect that we should grow our deposits further. If you check our savings, it's been on the upward trajectory. And we expect that on the retail side too, we expect growth along that line. So all in, we will expect that the deposits will grow. There's not too much emphasis on the DOM account as it is, because one, there's not too much appetite for dollar lending. So if we are able to grow the Naira deposits, we'll be fine.
Okay.
Next question, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ola Oguntoyna of Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for the presentation. You mentioned earlier that the shrinking of the balance sheet was deliberate. So I just wanted to confirm, is there an internal target for what you think an optimal balance sheet size is? Secondly, on the deposit decline also, that was said to be deliberate to replace expensive deposits. But if I look on a quarter-on-quarter basis, you actually saw some growth in your term deposits. So could you please explain what happened in that regard? My third question is on the reclassification of income. So I just want to clarify, what should we expect going forward? And if Mukhtar could please confirm how you compute the adjusted NIM, that would be helpful. My other question is a follow-up question to the coverage ratio at 200%. So at these levels, shouldn't you be able to write off some of these loans, or is the plan to release some of these provisions as profits in subsequent periods? And my final question was on the rate used for the balance sheet. So the financial statement says 344, sorry, which is different to what was mentioned earlier. So I just wanted to clarify that. I think those really are all my questions for now. Thank you.
Okay, let me just take the. You see, I did not say that it was deliberate decision to crash our balance sheet or our deposit base. No, that is not the message. What I've said is, I talk about efficient management of the balance sheet and our liquidity. And if in the process of that you have to let some deposits go, so be it. Because at the end of the day, it's not how much you have in deposit that matters. It's more about your net margin on those deposits. I think that's the message, really. If we're able to get double the deposit we have today or increase our balance sheet by 100% at this type of price, a very comfortable price, and of course we'll be too happy to do that. So we are not talking about crashing our deposit or crashing our balance sheet. No, that's not the message. We are just saying that we want to have on our balance sheet the type of numbers and deposits that will give us a decent margin. Mukhtar, I want to take a talk on the NIM again.
Okay. On the reclassification, I did mention that what we have reported in half year 2018 is consistent with what we have reported in previous year. The only exception was Q1 2018. So we are going to be consistent from where we are now. So that's what you should expect in terms of the classification of the income. Then on NIM's computation, we have interest income on treasury bills that we are holding on swap. The treasury bills we are holding for swap, we are earning interest on them. So that interest income is added to the interest income on the other side of the income statement, okay, for NIM's computation. Because the dollar fund that we are using for the swaps, they are true interest expense. And the interest expense is reported as interest expense on the top of the income statement. So we are just trying to balance it by saying if the interest expense is fitting as part of the NIMS computation, then we should bring the interest income also as part of the NIMS computation. Yeah, so that's what we did. You can check it. And then you mentioned the rate. I did say we use NIFEX. The NIFEX rate at June was 344, actually. NIFEX. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Renka.
Next question. I had follow-up questions on the coverage ratio.
Okay, yeah, on the coverage ratio, yes, please.
Okay, you did ask.
Want to repeat that?
Okay, I think you did ask if we don't want to write off because we have huge coverage ratio, right?
Yes, so shouldn't you be able to write off now, or is the plan to see some of these impairments subsequently?
Yeah, there are procedures for write-off, both from the customer side, from our side, and even from regulatory side. So you have to go through the procedures and assess the situation. But if any of the loans meet those requirements and we feel that it is in the interest of the bank to do that write-off, we will do it when the opportunity or when it is the best for us to do. And we'll also go through the procedures before we go through a write-off. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Can we take the next question?
Thank you. There's one further question in the queue so far. Once again, to participants, if you do have any further questions, please dial 01 on your telephone keypads now. So the final question in the queue so far comes from Michael Oeleas of Stanbic IPC Stockbrokers. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you very much for the presentation. I just wanted to find out what your yield on assets was for the for H1 2018.
What?
The yield on assets.
Yield on assets.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for your question. So I'll give you the breakdown and I'll give you the consolidated. Yield on trade bills dropped as expected. Dropped about 10% because most of the yields came down. Yields on loan came down to about 15% or thereabouts. So the weighted average yield is around 13%. These are estimates. I can give you the specifics when you call me later. But it's about 13%.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any further questions from the audience?
We do indeed. Three more have come through. The first is from Paul Faraz of Bain Capital Management. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you very much for the call. Just had a question on the interest expense for Q2. So you did a great job explaining why interest income had come down 41% in Q2 year on year. But I'm struggling to reconcile interest expense being down 63%. Perhaps you can explain that to me. Thanks.
Okay. Interest expense in Q2, if you look at we said we are letting go expensive fixed deposits. So in Q1, we have a lot of expensive deposits that flow through from last year, from 2017, that matured into 2018. So those were still at high rates. So in Q1, the interest expense rate was high compared to Q2 standalone, because when those expensive deposits matured in Q1, we have either have to let them go or we reprice them. So Q2 alone had much lower pricing for fixed deposit than Q1.
And on the FX side, we also reprice most of our dollar takings. So before then, in 2016, 2017, we were taking dollars 7-6%, but we brought them down to about 4.5%. And that was quite significant because with the exchange rate movement and the drop in the interest expense in dollars, it had massive impact on the interest expense as well.
Can you give me an idea of how much the rates came down?
Well, I think he just mentioned the one for dollar now. That's almost close to about 40% for the one for USD. And even for Naira, it's almost about that. And you have to appreciate the fact that even in terms of both the USD and the fixed deposit, even current accounts too, we've had to crash the interest we pay on some of the customers. And deposits too, in terms of volume, I'm sure you will have seen the drop, which is also part of why the interest expense on deposit dropped.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further question?
Yes, we have two further questions in the queue. The first is from Onone Ovorioli of Neurometrics. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Okay, good afternoon. I have two questions. The first question was the oil and gas loans. I think that's largely been trashed. But do you have any concerns concerning your loans to Erin Energy? Then the second question, I'd like a bit more, if you could share some more thoughts on your retail banking. You're targeting an increase in electronic banking income. So could you specify, do you have any year-end targets for that?
Well, let me say, you ask a question whether we have any concern about Erin. where you have any of your customer, any of your loan, where you have challenges, of course, we have concern. So to answer the question, yes, we have concern. But we are hopeful that all the issues around the asset will be resolved. On the electronic banking channel, talking about do we have a target for income? Of course, we have a target for what we expect to earn, you know, across all the channels. But the important thing is that you could see that we are growing steadily, and we expect that for H2, that growth will also continue. Next question, please.
Okay.
Thank you. And our final question comes from Jerry Nabue of Cardinal. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just a follow-up question on my mobile exposure. I just want to know if there's any updates in terms of the acquisition. Basically, the essence is to know when to expect any write-backs coming from that particular exposure. And then also, do you envision any worst-case scenario where you have to take further payments on that loan? Thank you.
Well, on the Nine Mobile, we've said a lot on the Nine Mobile. In terms of update, go ahead.
Well, for Nine Mobile, the sales process is very much on, and we expect that pretty much soon we'll have closure to the deal. And we don't expect that we'll have any additional impairment or provision taking place there. Well, right back, I think we'd like to take it one at a time. We'd like to be conservative. Let's even, the most important thing is that we are not going to be taking additional impairment. So at the closure of the transaction, we'll determine if we are going to be having a right back or not.
Okay, thank you very much. And let me use the opportunity to thank everyone that dialed in for your time and for your very insightful questions. And analysts at the same time that will continue to adhere to best practices, will continue to be very prudent while being very, very aggressive. We want to thank all our staff and other stakeholders for the good performance in H1, and we hope that H2 will also end on a very positive note. As we said earlier, we still see opportunities in retail. We see opportunities also in corporate, an area we've done very well over time. And also, from our treasury and liquidity management, we expect that we should be able to close the year on a very decent note. So I want to thank you once again. Good afternoon and thank you. Bye for now.
This now concludes the conference. Thank you all very much for attending. You may now disconnect.